This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home, and I already have my seatbelt on. I'm going to turn on the air conditioner. It is Thursday today. I think I'm off tomorrow. It is episode 69, before I forget to say that. It's been a long week, but it's been a good week. This project I'm working on now is a challenging project, but I think we actually made some headway on it this week, so that's good. Talked to a bunch of people this week. I don't know, an excessive, probably had at least 20 meetings this week, maybe 20, maybe, yeah, probably about 20 meetings this week, and had a chance to talk to a lot of people and some managers, and then working my way down into the workers as well in that, and just working on their outlines is what they do, and the little application that I wrote a couple of weeks ago and been tweaking on, that seems to all be working fine, so things are moving along. You know, it's different than obviously sitting and programming all day, but we're having a good time, and things are moving forward, so that's cool. The Super Secret Project is moving right along. Oh, there was a fun time in one of the meetings. I had talked to a supervisor, and the supervisor had gone back to visit with her employees, and her meeting actually, that went short because they're basically a service department, and so they just respond to requests. And what we're doing is we're tracking process flow. So the processes are usually starting someplace else and then getting to her department. So I said, well, I think we'll just wait until things get to you as opposed to trying to figure backwards from there. So instead of having an hour meeting, we ended up with, I don't know, 25 minutes or something like that. So she had gone back to talk to her people, and I was making some notes prepping for the next meeting. She came back and kind of leaned into the doorway. She said, so I hear you're a Star Trek fan. And I smiled. I said, I have been known to watch a few Star Trek episodes. And so then we got to talking, and, you know, she had said some of her people said, yeah, he wrote those Nitpicker's Guides. And so I showed her some of the Nitpicker's Guides and took her out to the website and showed her the revamped Nit Central and a few things like that. So that was fun. And I got home that day, and I actually had some friend requests, not only from her, but from someone in her office, and then someone in another one of the offices, and so that was fun. Anyways, this week, I've been chatting with friends a little bit about relationship. Not necessarily a new topic for us, but it started in an interesting way last Thursday, I got a phone call from one of my buddies that I get together and talk with, and he said, hey, excuse me, I'm a little tired today. He said, I'm having a conversation with his administrative assistant in my office, and he said, we're talking about the parable of the unjust steward, and I said, yes. He said, what do you think about that? And for those of you who don't know off the top of your head, the parable of the unjust steward, Jesus told this parable in Luke 16. As I was talking to another buddy about this, he looked at me and he said, I have never even heard that parable. It's a very interesting parable. Jesus basically says there was a lord, and he had a manager that was taking from him. And so he called the manager in, and he said, that's it. You know, you can't be my manager anymore. And the manager turns around and says, what am I going to do? I'm too weak to dig. When I lose my job, how will I care for myself? And then he has a brainstorm, and he starts calling in all of the Lord's debtors, and he says to him, he says, okay, how much do you owe? And the guy says, I don't know, something like 800 gallons of oil. And he says, great, make it 400 gallons. Great. How much do you owe? Well, I don't know, 1,000 bushels of wheat. Great. Make it 800 bushels. So he basically gives all the debtors these huge discounts with the understanding that once these huge discounts go through and he gets fired, then he can go to them and say, you know, I saved you a lot of money. You should take care of me for a little bit. And Jesus says that the Lord, in the parable, commended the unjust steward for his shrewdness. And Jesus follows that with, sometimes the children of the world are wiser than the children of light. And he follows that with the discussion about how you cannot serve God and mammon. And he makes the statement that you should use your mammon to make friends for yourself, so that if you fall on hard times, you'll have somebody to take care of you. This is a really interesting parable. And my buddy was calling, and he was saying, what do you think that means? And honestly, I'm on the other side of the phone, getting some water. And I'm thinking, oh, dear Jesus, what in the world were you trying to say in this? And the thought that comes to me, as I'm kind of half praying, half scrambling around, the thought comes to me, relationship. It's all about relationship. And so I tell my buddy, I said, well, you know, I think this comes back to a lot of what Jesus talked about, relationship and the mechanisms of relationship and why a relationship is important. And honestly, it was kind of it wasn't the greatest answer I've ever given, because when you just look at the parable of the unjust steward on its surface, there's just some weirdness there, because Jesus seems to be commending stealing, and he seems to be saying that children of light don't really, you know how to get things going sometime, when they should be more like this shrewd steward. And yet we look at what the steward's doing and we're thinking, well, I don't want to do that. But I said, well, you know, I think it has to do with relationship and the building of relationships. So anyway, so I saw him the next day. We got together for breakfast. And he said, whoa, wait. He said, are you working right now? I said, well, actually, I do have some things. He said, great, we'll talk about it at breakfast. So we talked about it at breakfast the next day. He brought the passage, and we looked at it, and we talked. And he said, man, I think you're dead on. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, I think it's absolutely, this is about relationship. He said, because this, some of this has played out in my life. There was a time in my life when I had some difficulties. And he said, you know what? It wasn't the Christians out there that helped me out when I had some difficulties. It was people didn't know Christ out there that helped me out. And the passage specifically, Jesus does talk about make for yourselves friends of the, I don't know what he calls it, unholy mammon or something like that. I mean, specifically make for yourself friends of the world, because when you have a problem, they're going to be there for you. And he had said, you know, that really was my experience. That when I had a problem, those people I had made friends with that weren't Christians were actually the ones that kind of helped me out. Now, I don't know. I don't know if that really helps us to understand what the parable of the good or the unjust steward means, but it did sort of put me down a little path, and then I had some other thoughts as we went on later in the week. And the path that it put me down was this immediate response that we have as humans whenever there's something that Jesus or God says that doesn't quite fit in the where we want all our boxes to be, then we go out of our way to criticize what Jesus said or what God says in the Bible. It's like, see, that doesn't make any sense. The Bible doesn't make any sense. And I was thinking about that, and specifically thinking about this idea of relationship, because really, I mean, if you just look at what Jesus is saying throughout the entire Gospels, it's all about relationship. He is not coming down to set down a new creed. He is coming to tell people that God wants to have a relationship with them. And so I kind of backed up and I was just kind of thinking about this idea of relationship, and specifically thinking about about the reverse of an idea that I had heard about of a book that was released within the last 18 months or so, I think. And I think the book is called The Evolution of God. And I was listening to the author on NPR. And he was saying that what you see in terms of people's understanding of God is directly related to their circumstances. So if they're in a tribal environment, in a warlike environment with scarce resources, God is going to be a warlord. And God is going to be somebody who will help them defeat their enemies. But the more resources that people get, the more comfortable they get in life, the more they have, as someone used to say, a cognitive surplus, that then their ideas of God, the more civilized they become, then their ideas of God become more correspondingly civil. And he was using this to bolster the idea that, in fact, God is just something that man makes up. And I understand the argument that he's trying to make, but I again think that there's a flip side to that argument. And that is that God picks his methodology of relating to humanity based on what humanity can absorb. So just because he relates to one people group in one way, that does not mean that that is all he is. He picks and chooses and relates, trying to get people to move up the steps. And then I started thinking about that in light of the whole pageant that we have in the Bible. And it's really interesting to just go think about God as being relationship driven, and then put what he's saying to the individual people groups as you move through the pageant that is in the Bible in that light. So we start out Genesis, God makes man, makes woman. He's coming down in the cool of the evening to fellowship with them. They decide they're going to disobey them. Death comes into the world. This is the first thwarting of relationship by man. What does God do? Well, God curses the ground. And it's easy for us to run to the conclusion, well, God is just punishing them. But in fact, if you put it in the light of relationship and God's desire to know people, there may be more to it than that, in that he's not really doing it to punish them. He is cursing the ground and causing toil and causing pain, because sometimes that's what it takes for us to learn anything. I mean, if all Adam and Eve had to do all day was sit around, watch TV, and eat chocolate bonbons, they certainly would not have gotten any closer in their relationship to God. In fact, they probably would have gone the other direction, because a life of ease does not necessarily bring us to a deeper relationship with God. Sometimes it's the troubles that we have to go through. Sometimes it's the pain that we have to go to. Where, as I said to one person this week when we were talking about new systems coming in, sometimes the pain of remaining the same has to exceed the pain of change, and that's the only time that you change. And so it could very well be that instead of trying to punish Adam and Eve, in fact, what God was trying to do was to increase the level of toil and pain in their lives so that they would realize, this isn't working out so good. Maybe I should do something else. And maybe God put toil in the world and pain in the world to help us get a handle on our carnal nature, on our flesh. Because working at toil, at least for me, does seem to give me some discipline and help me with that. Okay, so you flash forward. Flash forward to the Israelites. They're in Egypt for 400 years. They have been under a very authoritarian rule, being told what to do, told what to do. Their mentality as a people has been transmutated into an authoritarian-based slave mentality. I mean, you can't help but be if you're under slavery for 400 years. Moses leads them out. They get to Sinai. God goes through a whole bunch of preparation steps, which are very interesting in themselves, because when I say that God is all about relationship, I'm not saying that, oh, by the way, he's not holy, and he's not just, and he's not fearsome and awesome. And so God, in pursuing relationship with the Israelites, tells them, okay, here's some things you need to be aware of, but I'm coming down to the mountain, and I'm going to show you all some amazing things. So God comes down to the mountain. If I read it right, he gives them the Ten Commandments through the smoke and the lightning and thunder that's on the mountain. And after he does all that, to kind of reveal himself to them, probably as a good authoritarian figure, probably to get their attention, because they needed something to get their attention, maybe to try to convince them that he was powerful and that they could trust him. After he puts on this display, first thing they do is say, we really don't need to talk to him directly, Moses. Why don't you just go up there? So once again, humanity pushes him away. It says, go up there. You find out what he wants, and we'll just abide by it. Well, God knew that wasn't going to work. Eventually, by the time the children of Israel make it into Palestine, God sets up a governmental system that there is no hierarchy in. It's basically, you're my people. So there's the people, there's God. There's no intervening hierarchy. Everyone just does what he thinks is right in his own eyes. I mean, there's the priesthood, but the priesthood are not rulers. They're just facilitators. So God again makes this effort to say, let's have a relationship. And pretty soon the Israelites say, well, no, we want a king. And so they set up, once again, this hierarchical relationship between them and God. And, of course, that doesn't go very well at all. I'm getting my mail. So you flash forward to Jesus. Now we're all the way up to Jesus. And Jesus comes, and he begins to try to communicate with people, to try to tell them, look, it's all about relationship. It's not about rules and regulations. You never see Jesus setting up any kind of hierarchy. I mean, he deals with his disciples, but he's discipling them. And he's trying to get them to see the truth and break out of this idea of, when are we setting up the kingdom? You know, because they're always asking about that. And so it's true that he goes and gets 12 guys, or he works with the 70 or whatever. But I firmly think he's doing that not because he wants to lord it over them, but because he's trying to teach them. And any time the Israelites get all enthused with him and try to make him their king, he just slips away. Forget it. So then he's died. He's resurrected. I'm backing into my garage. Dies, resurrected. And he sends them out and says, basically, do what you saw me doing. Just go out, build relationship with people. Make disciples. Go tell the world, little bit at a time. Tell them. Well, after the resurrection and after the healing in the temple, Peter stands up, he speaks. They get 3,000 people in, and they do what humans do. Now, instead of letting God be God to these 3,000, they decide, well, we have to form a hierarchy. We have to kind of make sure that we keep all these people in line, because apparently God is not good enough at doing that we can just say, let everybody do what they feel is right, and God will talk to them, and God will straighten out the problems. We apparently are scared that that's going to happen, so they start a hierarchy. And of course, that then cascades into the church system that we have now, into all of the doctrinal statements that we have now. Now, I'm not saying that doctrinal statements are bad or that they're untrue. But what happens when you start inserting these things is now we have these hierarchical inserts between us and God. And we're really, in a way, pushing God away and saying, you know what? We'll just put our trust in the fact that we know the doctrines. You know, we got the rule book. We're good. It's no problem. And one of the really interesting things about the parable of the good shepherd, or of the unjust steward, is that it really does not fit in our rule book. Because we take what we've gone off to the side and made notes for and said, well, this is how you're supposed to act. This is what you're supposed to do. And Jesus seems to be commending behavior that we would not commend. And maybe that should just be a little jog for us to say we should not worry so much about our rule book and who's on the inside of our club and who's on the outside of our club, but we should just go ahead and focus on Jesus and focus on our relationship with him, because what we see when we look back over all the years of humanity as documented in the Bible is we see God reaching, God working with people at whatever level they were at. When the Israelites were going into Palestine, I firmly believe God knew exactly what their mentality was, that it was just going to be so easy for them to turn away from him, and he was doing everything he could to encourage that relationship, and that's why he told them, wipe everybody out. Now, of course, you can come back and say, well, what about having a relationship with people who are in Palestine? Well, apparently God didn't think he could have a relationship with the people that were in Palestine because they were so far gone he couldn't even get to them. Which, again, does not fit within the nice, neat rules that we have of God loves everybody. But as long as you feel like God has to fit in your nice, neat little rules, what you really do is kind of pushing him away and say, act in a way that I can understand so that I'll be comfortable, so I can have this image of you as opposed to having to deal with the reality of you. And maybe that's what the unjust parable of the unjust steward gets back to in part. when Jesus comes back and he says, you really can't serve God and mammon. Maybe he's really saying something along the lines of that if this is really bugging you, that this parable is really making you twitch, it's because you have this overinflated idea about the importance of money. And that money is just a tool and you should just use it. And you should really focus on me. I don't know. I told a friend of mine after going through this whole thing this week, I'm not really sure where we end up on this. What I do know is that God really is desperate for relationship with us. Deeply, deeply desires relationship with us. And I am not interested in things getting in the way of that. Even it being something as noble as church doctrine or organized religion. You know, I did tell a friend this week that I'm just almost to the place, because of the heavy connotations now in the word, that I'm just almost to the place where I don't like the word Christian anymore because of how much it's gotten loaded down with doctrine and with actions and... Anyways, I need to wrap this up. What I would rather be known as is a follower of Jesus Christ. I would rather be known as a man who is pursuing God's heart. I would rather be known as a person who loves God with all his heart, soul, and mind. And he loves his neighbor, whomever that neighbor is, as himself. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.